You're listening to Upfront. I'm Brian Edwards-Tiekert. The body of international law on refugees and asylum seekers that the Trump administration keeps running up against today got written and ratified in the years immediately following World War II. This is when the memory was still fresh of the millions of people who had been displaced by the violence and displaced by the victory and the rearrangement of peoples and national boundaries that it entailed. Our next guest is a product of that tumult. Anna Rebkin was born in Krakow. She lived under Soviet occupation, then Nazi occupation, then took a long and tangled path west until she finally made a home here in Berkeley. For 15 years, she served as the city's elected city auditor. She's just out with a new memoir entitled From Krakow to Berkeley, Coming Out of Hiding. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you for inviting me.
Tell me about your childhood pre-war.
We had a very happy, comfortable, middle-class childhood. My father was an attorney. My mother, unusually for that time, worked. We had a nanny and a cook and servants who cleaned the house, did the laundry, did the sewing. We, I think, had a happy childhood, loving, large family, until September 1, 1939, when we lost everything.
This is when Nazi forces started to advance from the west?
That's when Germany attacked Poland, and we fled just ahead of the German army, going east from western Poland to the eastern part of Poland, which was under Russian occupation, because we felt that the Russians were not as evil as obviously the Germans were. When we arrived in the Russian-occupied zone, unfortunately, because my father was part of the intelligentsia, we were considered enemies of the people, and we were hunted by the Russian Secret Service. So we had to move many times in order to escape being found by the Secret Service. And then in June of 1941, when the non-aggression pact between Germany and Russia was dissolved and the Germans attacked, the city that we were in, which was called by the Germans Lemberg, was taken by the Germans without a fight. The Russians left, and horror descended on us immediately. Within a couple of months, we had to move to the ghetto, which was the Jewish district of Lemberg, which was already incredibly crowded, and 200,000 extra Jews were supposed to live in these incredibly old, decrepit tenement houses. So for about a year and a half, we were in the ghetto under horrible conditions and constant threat from the Gestapo, who were constantly taking people out of the ghetto to destinations unknown. My father, who was still young, he was around 40, was a slave laborer in a factory which manufactured fumigation candles for the German army. So he had a little bit of ability to move around, and he had friends in the Gentile sect of Lemberg, and through them he managed to arrange an escape for my brother and I. So one day a man came into our room, and my mother told me to be quiet and do exactly what she told me, which was to get into a sack, which he then put over his shoulder and walked me out to a truck where my brother was already hiding amongst many bags. And it turned out that this man was a German soldier that my father bribed and had made arrangements with a Catholic, very, very courageous, altruistic Catholic family to hide us. And so we managed to escape from the ghetto. We were hidden for over 2 years by this couple. In the end, they wanted us baptized, which my parents allowed. My parents also escaped out of the ghetto. Unfortunately, they were hidden by an alcoholic woman who one day went into a bar and made some comment, which ended up with a bounty hunter going to the Gestapo and bringing them to her apartment, and they were killed. So we became orphaned, and after the war, the Jewish committee was looking for survivors, and they found us, and they tried to persuade this Catholic couple that we should go back to Krakow, because if any of our relatives survived, they would go back there. But the Catholic couple said no. They had promised our family that they would look after us until a relative came to pick us up. So we then escaped from our caretakers, and we made our way with a small group of other children who had survived to Krakow. So out of the 200,000 Jews who lived in Lemberg, only 1,000 Jews survived, and my brother and I were two of those survivors. When we got to Krakow, we were fortunate because one of our cousins survived under false papers during the war. And eventually, my grandmother, who was in her 70s, returned from a Siberian labor camp. And so we had a little bit of a family. But the Polish fascism was so strong at that time that Jews were just being murdered everywhere.
This is the post-war period.
Post-war period, after 1945. We were sent to a summer camp in the mountains because my brother was diagnosed with potential TB, and I was very weak and malnourished. So the summer camp was supposed to bring us back to better health. But the summer camp was being attacked by Polish fascists. So we had the boys, the senior boys, had to learn how to use rifles and grenades to protect this, basically an orphanage where these pretty sick children were being, there was an effort made to bring us back to health. So my grandmother and my cousin determined that it was so unsafe to stay in Poland for a Jew that we should leave. And we were very fortunate because a rabbi, Rabbi Schoenfeld from London, who had arranged escapes from Poland of children, Jewish children, prior to the war, tried once again to get a kinder transport out of Poland after the war. And we, my brother and I, were two of the children who were on that kinder transport. So we escaped from post-war Poland to England. And that's where I started my bewildering life in English boarding schools.
Before Nazi forces advanced into Poland, did you have a sense of your own Jewishness as a source of difference in Polish society?
I really did not, because my father, although he came from an Orthodox family, was the first of that family to go to the university. And he was also an officer in the Polish army. So he really was a secular Jew. And we were brought up, or I certainly had no idea about what Judaism meant or that I was Jewish. So it wasn't until we got to Lemberg and we had to wear the star, yellow star, And I was told that I was Jewish, that I started to understand that I was different from other people. And I started to hate Jews because Jews were not liked by anybody. So from a very spunky, according to my relatives, little girl, I became very shy, very introverted, lost all of my confidence, wasn't hardly able to speak to strangers. I was really afraid of everybody, lost my trust in adults because the adults couldn't protect me. It was a very difficult time. And then when we were baptized, I thought of myself as a Catholic. And I thought, oh, I'm now part of the people that everybody likes. Except my brother told me, just because somebody sprinkled water over you, you're still Jewish. So, and I found out after the war when I went to Polish elementary school that the other children recognized immediately that I was Jewish and gave me a very hard time.
The conditions you describe in the ghetto and what was then called Lemberg are pretty awful. It's not just a question of crowding, but Germans had Jews restricted to half rations when it came to food, 500 calories per day.
That's correct. We were always hungry. We were always looking for food. The food that we got was either brought in from the Gentile part of Lemberg by some enterprising merchant.
On the black market.
Well, no, what they did is they bought the refuse. Mm. They bought potato peels. They bought basically the throwaway food that nobody was going to use. And out of that throwaway food, we made our meals. So, for instance, I remember the dreadful taste of potatoes when they go rotten. They're sweet and disgusting. And turnips that were, you know, old and nobody wanted to eat them. And my brother and I, once in a while, were able to go outside of our apartment, and there was a hill where some nettles and sorrel grew. And we would pick that, and that was considered a delicacy because it masked the taste of this rotted food. And because my parents were more affluent than a lot of the people in the ghetto, they were able to once in a while get food on the black market. But hunger was a daily companion, not only for me, but for everybody in the ghetto. All of the children were totally malnourished, as were the adults.
How did you feel about your parents after they sent you off literally in a sack to be on your own with this Catholic couple?
You know, by that time, I was so beaten down by what was happening around me that I just obeyed without thinking. And I don't think that I realized that we were going to be apart. I thought, you know, we were going out and that they would follow. And only after a certain period of time in being in hiding with the Catholic couple did I realize that we weren't going to be together. My mother paid us one visit during the 2.5 years that we were in hiding when she and my father escaped from the ghetto. And I practically couldn't relate to her because so much time had passed already and I was numb of feeling. I don't think I felt very much of anything. Emotionally, I think I was pretty dead.
It sounds like some of the accounts of children who've been separated from their parents at the U.S. border for extended periods of time.
I simply cannot imagine what those parents are going through to be asked to leave their children and not know when they could reconnect with them, not knowing where they were going to go, who was going to look after them. I think it's absolutely inhumane what is being done to these families. And the children are going to be suffering for the rest of their lives, because to recover from that forced separation and that not knowing of what is happening has repercussions that I think I was only able to overcome after years of really wonderful family and people who looked after me, incredibly nurturing human beings who looked after me. And I hope these children find people like that, because otherwise it will be a lost generation.
I want to spend a minute on the conditions in Poland right after World War II. You made reference to the Polish fascism that remained and the violence against Jews. If you didn't have a sense of your Jewish identity before the war, how did you think about it after you returned to Krakow?
It was very, very confusing. First of all, because since we are orphans and we were penniless, we were being looked after by the joint, which is the Jewish committee that looked after survivors after the war, mostly funded through American sources. So here I was every day going to the headquarters of the Jewish committee, which had a soup kitchen, and that's where we picked up our food and then brought that food home. And there I saw the survivors of concentration camps. I saw people who were looking for their relatives or friends, because the Jewish committee was where all the information about survivors was being collected and was always reported on big, huge pieces of paper on the walls. So here I was in a Jewish surrounding. On the other hand, I had gone to a Catholic school in Lemberg, and I was taught by nuns, and I admired the nuns immensely and really thought maybe I should become a nun. So often I would find myself, when I was walking home and passing a church, under Polish Catholicism, when you pass a church, you have to cross yourself. And I was so indoctrinated that I crossed myself. But then I realized that I was bringing home food from the Jewish committee. So talk about confusion. I was totally confused as to who I was. And in the public school that I went to in Krakow, even though it was a public school, every classroom had a crucifix, and we were taught religion. It was part of the curriculum. So my Catholic education continued, but nobody tutored me in Judaism or taught me anything about Judaism. It was a very slow process, and it only really happened in England that I started to think of myself as a Jewish girl.
That period immediately after the war, I mean, when you're at this children's camp in the mountains that's meant to be rehabilitative, what you're describing is fascist gangs with machine guns attacking the camp. I hadn't been aware that there was that kind of violence in the wake of World War II. What was happening inside Poland?
Well, there were only about 65,000 Jews left in Poland after the war. The population of Jews in Poland pre-war was about 3 million. But even though there were so few Jews left, the Catholic Church stoked tremendous hatred against Jews, and it had done that prior to the war also. So you had the Catholic Church on the one hand stoking hatred. You had the Polish fascists who wanted to finish what the Nazis had not completed. And then you had the anti-communists who felt that the Jews had provided the communist leadership. And so they hated the Jews. So it was coming from many different sources. And the famous pogrom, the massacre of Jews in Kielce, the police just stood by. They watched Jews being massacred. They did nothing. So when Charlottesville, Virginia happened, you know, it was like coming back to that time in Poland after the war, that here were people filled with hatred, violent people, and the establishment allowed this to happen. It was just like Poland after the war. So the current situation in the United States brings back a lot of memories.
So I guess the question that leaves me with, where you go from the situation where society does not make you think of yourself as different for being Jewish before the war, to a situation where Jews are a hunted minority after the war. Is that something that was already in Polish society that was given an outlet because of the social dissolution that came with World War II? Or is that something that was a product of Nazi occupation that was a holdover after the war?
Unfortunately, it was even pre-war. Poland was an anti-Semitic country. And it just got, with Hitler's rise to power, it just got worse. I say that I had a very comfortable childhood because I was protected. My family was middle class. They were pretty well integrated into the intellectual life of Krakow. So we were surrounded by people who were not anti-Semitic. And I was a small child, so I was well protected. I doubt that my father felt that he was totally protected from anti-Semitism. And certainly my Orthodox grandfather, I'm sure, had many, many instances where he was at risk.
Yeah. Does it leave you worrying about things changing that sharply again?
In Poland?
No, wherever you are.
I think I'm more sensitive to the problems that we're facing in this country because of my experiences. Because I did live through the dissolution of a democracy, because Poland was a democracy prior to the war. And I did live through the total disregard of civil rights, human rights, And I'm watching now what is happening here, and I think we are at the brink of being in a situation where a lot of people are going to lose their civil rights.
Anna Rabkin, that's all the time we have. I want to thank you so much for coming in to tell your story.
Thank you for inviting me.
Anna Rabkin served for 15 years as the elected auditor of the city of Berkeley. Her new memoir is From Krakow to Berkeley, Coming Out of Hiding, An Immigrant Search for Identity and Belonging.